Good morning, 7:17 a.m. on the 14th of August, 8:14:14. Yeah, is that right? Must be. Yeah, May 14, a Thursday. First day of school, took the kid, dropped her. Already had my boots on, already been interrupted, so I got on my horse and started riding this morning. Here I am. Yesterday was a fun day. It was 1646. What a distance a few tunes make. Electric Avenue and Life During Wartime kicked it up, as they say, a notch this morning in terms of pace. But yeah, yesterday was I overslept and then I got engaged in a writing project, and before I knew it, it was time to go to the movies. Yesterday we had a sort of family day. It was the last day before school started, and everybody was home, so I decided we had to go see Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, it's a comic book. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I laughed a lot. I wasn't exactly on the edge of my seat, but I laughed a lot. I was pretty sure I knew how it was going to come out, but I wanted to watch it just to see how they did it, and it did come out the way I thought it would. And they had enough twists in there to keep me engaged. It's unlike the Avengers. I was talking to myself with John Ward afterwards. In the Avengers, I went to see the Avengers like 4 times. I really liked the Avengers. There was something about it. In part, I think it was the character engagement, while it was definitely a comic book action hero plot, a superhero plot, there was enough variety in the character interactions to make it fun. Well, I think part of that is that they had such a large cast. And the realization early on that even though it might look like one of these 5 ne'er-do-wells have been killed, no, not really. Yeah. That's not going to happen because they have to have the 5 of them. This wasn't exactly Joss Whedon level writing. But I enjoyed it. I had fun. It's a good popcorn flick. I hope nobody takes that last bit as a spoiler. The kids liked it. I liked it. The only thing that got a little old after a while is the soundtrack. The soundtrack. Note. The music was a bit in places it was fun, in places it was that was the description. And a lot of places didn't actually match. I didn't think. It's music is subjective, and this had to have been a low-budget effort, relatively speaking, in Hollywood terms. They had some good CGI. They had some good effects. They had, don't get me wrong, it was still a well-produced movie. It had high production values. It's just that soundtrack. In the beginning, it was cute. In the beginning, there's a scene where Peter, the main character, Peter Quill, picks up a carnivorous rat and squeezes it about the body and sings into it as if it were a microphone. It was while dancing in rain. And if they had done singing in the rain, I would have laughed my behind off. It wasn't. It was something else. Because, yeah. Anyway, it was I can't fault them for the opening. It's basically the Ishmael Wong opening, other than the alien abduction. Alien abduction. But, yeah, his mother dies and he's orphaned and spaceship picks him up. Okay, well, fine. Now, I'll grant you that conceit. Let's see where we go from here. It's the nature of the beast that if you're going to start with a main character who's young, the first thing you have to do is dispose of parents. In fantasy, they do that by having a kid run away and then ignoring whatever's happening back on the farm. Because the point of view character is now away from the farm, so there's no way for them to know what's going on at the farm. And of course, nobody cares what old folks are doing. So, yeah. Which is why I wrote Ravenwood.
Morning.
Morning. So, I was willing to grant them that. There are a couple plot holes. Not as many as there are in, say, the first episode, first season of Heroes, but still, I was like, okay, fine. So it was interesting. It was fun. It was a good time. And it took most of the afternoon. And by the time we get home, it was basically time to fix dinner. I ate too much popcorn. It was delicious. So, yeah, I don't care. A day. We had a day. Upshot was I didn't get to. Didn't get to talk yesterday because I was kind of busy. But I figured, you know what? This is good. I'm not gonna go. Oh, I suck! I didn't rock today. I didn't walk yesterday. Okay, fine. Move on. And I'm really happy with the stuff that came out of yesterday, so that counts. Now I'm still facing a deadline. Today's the 14th. I've got 16 days. Ish to finish this novel. Yeah, so it's gonna be tight. But kids gone to school. The much needed extended break that I was expecting from familial duties is not happening this weekend. My wife is sick, and apparently too sick to go on a trip that she's been planning for the last 6 weeks. So she's probably going to cancel it. Monk post. I thought about going in her place, but that would have been kind of mean on my part to leave her with the children while she's sick, and then have me wander off someplace down into Arizona. Maybe she'll go. Who knows? I've given up predicting. My legs are telling me that I pushed a little too hard the first bit. So that was yesterday. Today's amusement centers around an interview that Lee Childs did with BBC, talking about the book publishing market and the Kindle, which is a failure in terms of Amazon's revenue streams and is probably going to go away or something along those lines. It's so 2012. And over on the Passive Voice blog, it's a publishing, writing, authoring blog written by an IP attorney during the day and whose alter ego is the Passive Guy. And he picked up this interview and posted it on the blog and offered some commentary. And the comment stream on it is hysterical. Barry Eisler weighed in, and Lee Child actually came over and started leaving comments. I haven't read the whole thing yet, but it's pretty clear that, you know, he may be a big name in thriller. He may be a big poobah in mainstream publishing. And he sells a lot of books. I suspect he makes six figures a year. And his credentials, as he points out, he's been doing this for 20 years. He knows how publishing works. And the problem is, and I think it was PG who pointed out, Passive Guy, that you know how publishing used to work, and you think it still works that way. And that's the bottom line problem. That's what the issue is. That's what the whole crux of this kerfuffle is over. Hachette trying to protect its paper sales when paper sales matter less and less. Yes, I know most books are still sold in paper, but that's most books. It's not most fiction. It's certainly not most genre fiction. When you look at the numbers, there's no way it can be. Textbook reference books, yeah, they still sell mostly in paper. And there's a lot of textbooks that get sold every year because colleges have text requirements. My daughter had to go drop $250 because of course packets. So the new, how do we get people to buy our stuff rather than how do we get people to buy you stuff? So more and more faculty are using course packets, having them buy only the selected chapters that they need to use at twice the price of the base textbook. When I was textbook manager, I saw that coming. And when I was in my post-grad, master's and doctoral, I saw it happening more and more and more. It was happening particularly in online courses, in that people were making electronic assets available, and they were really quite expensive when compared to the actual books, but they were integrated into the environment so that you had to actually sign up for the course, be registered in the course, and sign into the course in order to have access to your textbooks, which was the publisher's way of protecting their intellectual property. Yeah. And I think that's really all I need to say about that. So, yeah, most books are still sold in paper. They're not the books that I sell. And that's the part that people like Lee Childs are missing. That's the part that he doesn't really understand. He doesn't understand that if his ebooks were priced at $6.99, he wouldn't be selling 750,000 books. He'd be selling 2 million books. He'd be selling so much more. Now, the problem, of course, is that his revenue sharing arrangement with Hachette is also way lower, and that he'll only get 25% of the cover price. So at $6.99, you know, a quarter of, I'll call it $8, $7.99, $8, you get $2, which is about a dollar less than I make on my books. But he's going to get $2 on 2 million sales, so that's $4 million. And if he sells them at about $10.99, call it $10, he'll get $2.50 on 700,000. This is only $1.4 million, and I feel for the guy. The argument that it's about whether or not the retailer has the right to set the price they want to sell is sort of, no, not really. Yeah, sort of. Hachette actually wants Amazon to keep doing what they're doing. As someone pointed out, I forget who now, that Hachette wins if they keep the current contract, which is why Amazon is saying, no, we're not going to do that contract anymore. Because when Amazon discounts one of the books, they pay Hachette as if they sold it at full price. So they drop the price to about 5% margin, because they are paying a fixed price for those books from the bigs. Unlike our books, where they publish them and take a cut, 30%, that's not how they're selling books to Macmillan or Hachette or Tor, pretty sure. $18.50 on the back half. I'm not surprised. I was kind of played by the time I made the turn and started the recorder. So anyway, that was yesterday. And what I'm looking forward to today is going in, getting some breakfast, getting another cup of coffee, and settling in for a morning of fun and festivity. Fireworks with the word processor. I can hardly wait. At any rate, tomorrow is another day. With any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.